Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Those watching on Rumble, please like and follow. That's a blessing to us. Those that are subscribers, thank you so much for being a part of what we do. We really appreciate that. I hope all of you are enjoying nice fall weather wherever you are. Thanksgiving's next week, which is wonderful. Today, I'm going to be talking to Diana West again. And she always has very interesting and meaningful insights into what's going on. And we're going to start at October 7th, the Hamas attack on Israel, but then come forward. And some of the key things we want to communicate is don't ever just fall for the narrative. They always present a narrative out there that's a fabrication. And they push it out there knowing it's going to cause division. People are going to jump on one side or the other. And when they do that, their main point is making sure whatever side you're on, whatever you really believe is true, is not what actually happened. It's a weird game of lies and deceit, but they want us to never really know the truth about anything. And so therefore, we can't just jump to one side or the other side and buy the party line, whatever they're being sold. If you're pro-Israel, then this is what you think about everything. We can't do that because inside of the narrative, on whatever side it is, there's so many lies and half-truths because they're pushing an agenda. But Diana West reminds us of a very important thing. It's always about the revolution. The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. So whether it's a terrorist attack or an educational policy or what they're teaching our children in the schools, it's always about the revolution. And we sometimes forget that and we think, no, these are well-meaning people that are just misguided in what they're trying to do. And that's never the case. The revolution is all there is to the Marxist. And anything that contributes to that revolution is good. That's their worldview. Stalin said, any lie that advances the communist conquest is by definition not a lie, but the Marxist-Leninist truth. Well, that's where we are, and I hope you enjoy this conversation with Diana West. Diana West, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be with you, Curtis.
Well, I really appreciate your updates on your Patreon channel, the videos and the articles and things. They help me have a good, refreshing perspective. And I've always appreciated yours. So many people, as you mentioned in one of your recent videos that you made, people that really seem to be on our side, a lot of times don't get all the different things coming at us. They'll be really good on some things and then like, whoa, they totally missed this. But anyway, I've appreciated that about you, that you seem to, at least we're like-minded. If we're wrong, we're both wrong together. But your perspective, usually I see, I go, that's exactly what I was thinking. And so I just wanted you to share with the Agenda Weekly people just some thoughts on some things going on. It seems like, I was thinking about it, it seems like we're in a B-grade movie. We're living in it where you know something's getting ready to happen because the music started, but it just keeps coming at us and it keeps coming at us, which I know is part of the strategy to overwhelm and to confuse and to get us just to give up. But what, kind of go back to start with the most significant recent event. Go back to October 7th for a moment and just talk about your initial reactions, feelings, questions you were asking and things like that. We'll start there and then kind of come up to today.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good place to start, because I think October 7th really takes us into a new phase of this continuing revolution. And of course, October 7th is the day of this horrific massacre of mainly Israeli civilians, women, children, families, and capture of what is now, I don't even know people realize, 239 hostages are being held by Hamas. It's almost a non-story, don't you find? I mean, it's barely discussed, but the agony continues for these people, who many of whom, I just found out today that there's a three-year-old toddler with American citizenship who's now an orphan since October 7th. Both, I don't know if it's a boy or girl, but both the child's parents were killed. And there is very little concern about this group of people. But in terms of what happened that day, you know, horrifying shock, I felt like we were past this kind of action. It seemed like things had been relatively quiet in the Middle East for some years. Not really if you're on the ground there, but in terms of being a wider war and so on. And I guess the first thing that was so shocking was, how did it happen? And I know people got the word very quickly. There was this intelligence failure. You started seeing media stories almost immediately about this intelligence failure of Israel. And then if you think about it for another minute or two, you have to realize it has to be an intelligence failure, if it's a failure, on the part of many other countries, because you've got Egypt there, you've got United States listening posts in Egypt and elsewhere, you've got Jordan, you've got a whole range of surveillance states that would all have to be failing in the exact same way. But the real shock for me was seeing some reports, and not really very many in mainstream media, although I have to give a shout out to the New York Times on this one, which is unusual, of the military, the Israeli military failure to defend, failure to rescue for at least 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours. And I'm talking about getting assets, military assets, including simply flying F-16s even quickly to the areas under attack. It was something like a 25 square mile area of Israel that was under attack, various communities, kibbutzes, and so on, under attack by a force we later find out of over 2,000. I've even seen as high as 3,000 Hamas terrorists who were followed by unknown numbers of Gaza civilians who also joined in this attack. And there was no military response until it was pretty much, the massacre had happened. This is absolutely inexplicable in normal terms. But then this was where things got very interesting. The New York Times actually published a story about the timeline, and they were able to interview an active duty brigadier general by the name of Dan Goldfuss, who was, I believe, in the paratroopers, who discussed what happened to him on that morning when he saw what was happening on his phone while he was home on leave in Tel Aviv or in that area, jogging. And he started getting reports about what was going on in the kibbutzes to his south. And he talks sort of around, and this is in the story, and I've quoted this. I can send you links if you'd like to have them so people can see it. But I was so moved, just struck by his discussion of trying to contact his army comrades on the bases, discussing not being able to rouse people, and then finally finding a couple of buddies, army buddies, and getting their guns and driving to the scene of the attack in their car and getting out, and it was about 10 o'clock. So if you think of the attack as starting around 6:30 in the morning of that day, and somebody not even on alert getting there by 10 a.m., why was it still going 10 hours later, 8 hours later, without even a helicopter? And, this story sort of snowballs when you get some other reports like that. You find that different individual heroes drove in their own cars. There was a report of a retired general who got in his Audi and drove to the scene of battle. I mean, it's ludicrous on one level, but they were so brave. There's nothing ludicrous about that. But where was the army?
Yeah.
Then there was a very interesting discussion of this by the former Israeli spy, Jonathan Pollard, who served 35 years in American prisons from an arrest back in the 1980s. Talking about this, he had since gone to live in Israel, and he was talking about this, and he said that he had friends in the helicopter group, the attack helicopter group, who were ready, loaded, sitting in their cockpits, waiting for orders to deploy, and they were close enough to hear what was going on. They were close enough at least to hear gunshots, I suppose, maybe more, I don't know, but the military assets were quite close, and Israel is so small that you're never very far. And so why were there no air assets deployed? Why was there no army deployed until so late in the day? And my first thought, and this is kind of where I'll leave it for now, and we can talk about it, but my first thought was how much it sounded like Benghazi. Benghazi was a situation where we had men under fire, not nearly so many people under in peril, but we had men under fire at the United States consulate, including the ambassador, and no military assets were deployed to help. And at that time, we learned eventually in the weeks after that there were air assets as close as maybe 90 minutes away, I think it was, in Aviano, Italy, that could have sent F-16s and dispersed terrorists. Well, the Israelis have them so close they could have been there in minutes. And no one has still answered this question, because that same day, the head of Israel, Netanyahu, declared Israel to be in a state of war. And that's that the story kind of froze in terms of official discussion, widespread media attention, and narrative building. So that's kind of the origin. And so you have to wonder, what was this trigger for? Because indeed, that is a trigger for something.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's so often we've seen that is governments, especially if they're tied in with the United States government in any way, just constantly do that. I mean, where they will sacrifice people, whatever, for a cause, like, oh, we need to do this, so whatever has to happen to set this up, then it just so be it. And then they're good at kind of covering the narrative and just making it look like it was an accident. But like you said, they never go back and go, how did this really happen? What was really going on here? And thankfully for researchers like you and many others that have then written the books years later, once you have all the details, you go, oh my goodness, they totally knew about this, and it was a plan. And so
It was a
that's,
plan.
yeah, and
What's the, we can go back to Pearl Harbor,
I
which
know.
we don't find out about until many years later. And even still, it's very widely believed to be a surprise attack that came out of the blue without any warning. When years later we find out that America, for example, was reading the Japanese secret codes, and there were many other indicators, many other people aware that an attack was coming, trying to tell the United States government they wanted an attack somewhere, they wanted it to happen. Or we can look at, Gulf of Tonkin incident that starts the war in Vietnam. Again, not the way it was described. It was a fake story that got us into a war. And 9/11, so many things about 9/11 tell us that this was not what we saw on television or how it was presented to us, and so on. Another trigger for a wider war. Now I hope we're finally getting people paying attention are getting better at seeing this. But this is, as you say, it's something that's been done over and over again. The people are expendable in the eyes of their leaders, and they have a plan. They have an agenda, a strategy, and now it's up to us to try to figure out what it is. But it's horrifying. It's
Right.
just
Yeah.
horrifying.
So, okay, laying that aside for a second. So I know our government knew. I just know they know everything. They have CIA people, every terrorist group in the world, they know what's going on. So, and the Israeli Defense Force is famous for being so capable and so, just great at what they do. So you go, okay, something's going on. Maybe they withheld some of the info from the top so they wouldn't really know or whatever. But that all aside, this thing did happen. Okay, and all these innocent people were just slaughtered and tortured and all the wicked things that we all saw. But then you go just shortly thereafter in America, all the massive pro-Hamas protest, and you're like, well, regardless if they knew or not, what these wicked people did was wicked. And it was like a throwback to a barbaric age. We're just so far removed from in America, it's hard to even understand that kind of way of living. It's like, what in the world is this? But talk about that then, and some of the connections, Judith Clark, and some of the things where you see this isn't quite as different as it looks, as many other things we've been confronted with for many, many years.
Exactly. Well, I think it's connected, and I think all of what you describe is connected to this trigger. I think that it's not happenstance that we then see this eruption of these Palestine slash Hamas protests in not just America, but you see them in London and you see them in France and you see them, you saw a real pogrom, they call it, in Dagestan, Russia, when a plane coming from Israel was bombarded by this crowd trying to find the Jews cutting off the plane. I mean, it was absolutely horrific, but it's hard for me to imagine that that is just a natural reaction. I think these are all linked, and indeed it could be that what we're seeing in the West is really the intended direction of this energy. And maybe we should think about it as possibly, anyway, concentric circles. You have this horrific event and real pain and real blood and real people happening, and then you start building out from that. And again, and yes, what is the first thing we see organized? We see this organized, all of a sudden, jumping not even two-state solution. We get to free Palestine from the river to the sea, which is the rhetoric of the eradication of the Jewish state, Israel, and the elevation of Hamas and its cause, if you will, which is literally based on a covenant, the Hamas covenant, which is literally based on the eradication, not just of the Jewish state, but of the Jewish people. So it's about the murder of Jews, and this becomes the popular or seemingly popular, certainly mass reaction, organized. Right? Organized. Where'd they get all those flags? Where'd they get all those posters? Where'd they get all that stuff right away? You know, this is a very quick action group with a lot of money and organizational power. So this to the messaging, I think, was ready. The messaging was ready. And you know, as to who knew what when, I certainly can't even speculate, but there was messaging ready that suggests to me that we're looking at kind of a again, this new phase of a revolution that has little to do with the argument or the lives or the real estate that set it off. And indeed, if you saw any headlines just recently, you see the Home Secretary in London, in Britain, United Kingdom, Suella Braverman, was fired over her completely opposite response, which was essentially to see these pro-Hamas protests as hate marches. And she was very outspoken about this, and also talking about the peril this brought to Jews in London or elsewhere in England with this kind of invective going on and this kind of rhetoric. And she was fired. So the conservative government in the United Kingdom no longer wants to be associated with civil tolerance, religious freedom. This guy, they are lining up on the other side, which is another shockeroo. And not only that, they've brought back into the government, and this apparently shocked British political observers. They brought back David Cameron, one of the big uber globalists we have in recent years, back into the government. He is now foreign secretary. And you have to kind of ask yourself, is it possible that this whole earthquake is about driving new fracturings of Western governments and new alliances to sort of get rid of the nationalists or the people, you know, the Christians, the Jews, the traditionalists, the Western civilization people, and kind of moving them to the side? And then I turned to some American news and saw that there was this leak, you know, secret, of course, not really being leaked to Axios, discussing this kind of revolt inside the State Department and other agencies like that against the US government, a supposed support for Israel, even though that support doesn't even extend to calling for the release of these 239 poor hostages. But in other words, you see another fragmentation here that's similar to what's going on in England. And I kind of wonder if that energy is what they needed released to kind of reconstitute our governments going forward toward your agenda 2030s and so on, you know, back on track, pushing forward in a bigger way. And I know you wanted me to talk about how this leftism is all linked. This is something that I think is a really important piece of it for people to understand. It's a really simple thing for me because I wrote a book a while back called The Death of the Grown-Up, and a lot of it looked at the 1960s revolutionaries and how all of that was perceived. And one thing I learned back then was you would see in the anti-war movement, for example, the anti-Vietnam War movement, that would be 50 some years ago, you would see all of these groups. Back then, it wasn't defund the police. They said stop the pigs. That's how they used to talk. It wasn't BLM, but it was stop racism. It wasn't legalize marijuana, but it was get rid of drug laws. It's all these things. Get rid of, sexual hangups was the term of the day. Now we have LGBTQ. But you saw all these disparate leftist groups that don't necessarily seem to line up together with an anti-war movement. Why, how did that work? But it was all about the revolution. And there was a publication of the Students for Democratic Society, which was not democratic, it was communist. But they had a publication called New Left Notes. And around 1970, this is what it said. It said, you have to realize that the issues didn't matter. The issues were never the issues. You could have been involved with the Black Panthers, the Weather People, SLATE, SDS. It didn't really matter what. It was the revolution that was everything. That's why dope was good. That's what they used to call marijuana. That's why dope was good. Anything that undermined the system contributed to the revolution and was therefore good.
That's right.
So now we add the pro-Palestine or pro-Hamas, pro-terrorism to the mix, but we see the same groups. And this is why when I saw somebody on Twitter posted a picture of, you mentioned Judith Clark. Judith Clark came out of the 1960s. She was in the Weather Underground. She later morphed into a splinter group called the May 19th Communist Army or something. She was working with Black Liberation Army terrorists. They were all domestic terrorists who in 1981 or thereabouts famously or infamously robbed a Brinks truck to get money for the revolution. And in the process, they murdered two policemen. This is in Nyack, New York, small town in north of New York City, and a security guard. And she was put in jail for a very long time with her compatriots, but she was paroled. This was a shock in 2019. Darn if she doesn't appear at the first Grand Central shutdown about a week or so ago at the Free Palestine protest. This old lady is still at it, and it's just a continuum of revolution.
Yeah, no, it's the once a communist, always a communist,
Yeah.
and they are so committed. Yeah, she'll sit there for 35, 40 years in prison, just waiting for the day to get out to join right back in the revolution. It is, I know you've studied communism a lot, that's why I've enjoyed your books, but I have too, and it's
I
they are
know.
just masters of that infiltration, subversion from within of whatever it is. They will become all things to all people, if they can use them even to gain 1 inch in an area
Right.
they're trying to accomplish, whether it's the
Right.
LGBTQ, all that stuff, all those, you see the formation of those things and the really energy behind it always came from some Marxist group or Marxist person that was trying to tear down the culture. And yeah, I think that's exactly what's going on now. These people have been in this country for 100 years,
Yeah.
organizing, finding fellow travelers, like-minded people, working their way into positions of influence. We were really aware of it in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and people were talking about it. But no, whatever changed to have that not still be the agenda? Well,
Yeah.
I think some of this you see, that's their incredible network of people that are connected to instantly have a protest when you need it, instantly have the signs, have the things to stir up the tensions, the revolution,
Right.
and just the confusion and chaos in the society. They love chaos.
Exactly. Sometimes you try to find a logical reason for something. It's not always there. Sometimes it's just the chaos. It's just the upset. It's just the division, dividing conservatives or divide, you know, like the British government or what have, if you can call it conservative, but, you know, dividing groups that had some unity. It's part of their strategy. There was an interesting thing. I thought that Natan Sharansky, a former Soviet dissident who came to Israel and worked in the government and wrote a big book about democracy, I think George Bush was very taken with, but he was talking about the sort of, it's not really flowering, but the poisonous flowering of anti-Semitism that you're seeing on US campuses right now. And he was saying, oh my goodness, look how in the middle of the 20th century, the campuses were very anti-Nazi, they were very supportive. And he thought that what we've seen is this shift on the campuses, this Marxification, really. And I was thinking about it and I thought, no, actually it's the same driver, meaning that in the 1940s, to be anti-Nazi was to follow Communist Party line.
That's right.
But look how they switch. So now in the 2020s, to be pro the new Nazis, pro the, you know, the big people who are animated by anti-Semitism being the Islamic jihadists, that is again this leftist line. So in a way, it's just a continuum of Marxist influence in our campuses, which is not to say that it would be desirable to be pro-Nazi in the 1940s, but I'm just saying that it's just a horse to ride. They ride these horses, or these Trojan horses, really, to their end, which again is always about breaking us up. They're always about destroying, you know, God, country, family, basically. That's the mission. And whatever it takes, whatever group it takes to use and then discard, it's what they will do. And it's just important to have as long a view on it as they do, because it is, you know, the long march is a real thing. It takes a great deal of time. You have to really long historical lens to at least, you know, recognize the patterns, because they are patterns. You know, we've seen it all before.
That's right. And they've, again, from that infiltration and subversion, whether it's the seminaries in America to get a hold of the church or whatever it was, they have done, in my opinion, the same thing with Islam. They saw back in the 50s, wait a minute, these people hate the same people we hate and want to take down, and they will kill themselves for the cause. I mean, a communist doesn't want to do that generally, because they're an atheistic, where this is all they've got. If you can find someone that'll strap a bomb on and go cause chaos, oh yeah. And you study Islam, especially its radicalization from the 50s forward. It's been armed, funded, trained by the Soviets at that time, and now Russia and China today. And that's why even the AK-47 is a symbol of terrorism. Only communist countries make that gun. So it's so they are the ones that behind the scenes stir these things up to allow that the conditions that make things again conducive to dramatic change, dramatic steps forward, whether it's in the size of government to solve the big problem, and it pulls people in, because when you're afraid, it makes those giant leaps forward so easy, because people just like September 11th, who's, give all of our constitutional rights. That's fine. If you'll keep us safe, do the Patriot Act, and we're happy with that. But that's what happens too.
It's incredible. And I feel like, at least in my own experience, I've been fooled many times.
Yes.
And now at least you get older, at least you get a little wiser in terms of at least recognizing the same mechanisms that are for something else, and the duplicity of the leaders. I mean, remember, in terms of the Israeli leadership, it was Netanyahu who made Israel into a Pfizer experimental Petri dish, and indeed bragged about that. You know, he thought that was a great thing, to make essentially the Jewish people into guinea pigs for the COVID shots. And I mean, Israel was very advanced, and I don't mean that in a positive way, in terms of the COVID lockdowns, the tyranny. They had a green pass, if you remember. They were very ahead on all of that horrible stuff. And then all of a sudden it was sort of dropped. And you know, one thing I do wonder about is you know, war is for corrupt leaders, war is a great savior of them in terms of distracting people, causing people to suddenly want to defend their country and put everything else aside, and all of the stress of it and so on. It becomes a big distraction from perhaps Israel starting to look at what had just taken place in terms of their own COVID die-off, which included very recently, right before this war started, there happened to be a child who had, the son of a doctor, 8 years old, I believe, who had been used in COVID shot commercials as a public service announcement, who died very likely of having been vaccinated himself, 8 years old. And so that was, you know, one of the last headlines before you go into war. And I'm not saying that caused it, but you know, what was going on internally that might have caused them to decide now we need to move, and you know, we need this terrible, some sort of calamity as an excuse. And again, we've seen this before, so it's not really that far-fetched to imagine it, that it could be done, because this is what people like that do. So mm-hmm. the people always suffer, and you know, have to learn to steel themselves to this.
Yes, and I know our own current government, they've tried to create every chaos imaginable over the last 3 years. I mean, just blown up the Nord Stream pipeline. I think they thought Russia would attack over that, and they didn't. They had, yeah. Which I was even surprised. They knew, okay, they're provoking us into a war. And then all the other things that have happened to do that. So it's a, but I, again, and I know you're this way too, we are totally pro-Jewish people. And so I want to make sure, because a lot of times you say anything negative, then they think you're like, no, we are for the Jewish people. We love the Jewish people. It's a travesty what's happened to them. And we're, even with the Pfizer stuff, that makes me just disgusted when the elites convince a leader, oh, this is going to be a great thing. And maybe he does it out of being naive or whatever, but jumps on board the science bandwagon, and then his own people suffer tremendously, and will continue to suffer and have infertility.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, I'm a Jewish person too, so.
I know you are, and I just want to, people always twist everything.
I know people, there's a tremendous sensitivity to talking about these things, but I think there's a way we have to be self-critical as Americans or Israelis. It's very important to always see what is true and what is false. And I think what you and I have been shocked at, some of our conservative allies, we thought have become extremely really showing a side that I did not expect in terms of accepting all as truth coming out of the Hamas Ministry of Information and anything coming out of Israel as being false and somehow duplicitous. And it's been a very strange process. I think that was another shockaroo. Another shockaroo is waking up and finding out there's so many people that can just ignore the heinous acts of October 7th and move right on to something else and not care or see it as any sort of significant factor in any of the war that followed, you know, regardless of, again, as you say, these things happened regardless of the mechanism or the way it happened. There still is you can't just rip the pictures down, which is one of the strangest, most horrible phenomena. I don't know if you've probably noticed this too. It seems like there are videos from every locale in the world where pictures of the hostages have gone up, where people have gone over to take them down or cover them up. And you just think, what is that about? Well, I think it's pretty clear that the hostages destroy, they undermine any sort of logical support for this notion that Palestine is this freedom-seeking, loving entity, that the Jews or the Israelis are the focal point of evil. You know, then you have to say, well, what about the 239 civilians in captivity? It's a very strange, there's so many shockwaves going on right now, it's really hard to kind of assess them all.
And the fact that those protests wouldn't all be about those 239 people. So you must
Right.
release them right now. Prove you're
Release
not,
them, right.
prove you're not
Yeah.
monsters. How dare you
Yeah.
just take innocence and destroy it?
Yeah.
Whatever. But no, that's what, yeah, it's shocking. I watched last night with my boys, Radon and Tebby.
Oh, really?
The old
Yeah.
movie
Yeah.
from the 80s or
Sure.
something. But
I remember that.
how
I do
important the
remember. Yeah.
citizens were to, like, no, we're going to risk life and limb to get our hostages
Yeah.
back, whatever's necessary. And it was
Right.
amazing how they were able to do that. I think only one person died or whatever it was,
Yeah.
but it was but that's how the world has changed. And I know you've talked about that too, and some of the things you've written, that now 239 hostages, oh, whatever. What's on the TV today?
I know,
And
it's
they
really
survive
amazing.
a couple
Yeah.
hostages, the whole world stops. It goes, you
Right.
have to release these people, and we're going to put
Right.
pressure on you, and we're going to do whatever. And now it's like, I think the whole, it all ties in. It's all part of the cultural rot.
Yeah.
It's the devaluing of human life has so penetrated, especially the younger generations where they were raised. You should be able to, abort your baby whenever you want. You should be able to do whatever you want. So much so that I think it's tainted how precious a human being is.
Yeah,
And
I think that's
especially
true.
a woman or a child, where they're even more
Right.
special than even a man. A man's, you die for them to protect them, but all life is so precious, and that has just been thrown by the wayside over the last 50 years. So I think that's why these things, they're like, oh, well, it's not me, it's not my kids, so why would I worry about them?
Right. Well, and also that's so true. And also the ability of the media to spin up and spin down issues. You know, if the media wanted to, they could create all kinds of sympathy for the hostages, but they don't want to. And so it people are so cowed by what surrounds them in media, social media, TikTok, etc. And it's like programming them. They are programmed, and it's very hard to pierce that.
Yes.
It's a very strange time because it's you go back 100 years, you go back to France being paralyzed and in practically civil war over the mistreatment in a trial of one man, the famous Dreyfus trial, a man set up that went to Devil's Island, and then there was a big movement to find justice for this one man. And then not that long after, you start seeing the Soviet Union come together and starting to purge people by the hundreds or the thousands or the tens of that, and life starts to, and then the culture of abortion, I think, can also plays right into this, just the deadening, the numbing, the lack of moral clarity on so many of these issues, and then we come to this, and it's just shocking. I think in some ways, except for the actual barbarity of the attacks themselves, I think that the reaction to the hostages in the rest of the non-criminal world is the second most shocking thing about this incident, more than anything else. It's how can people not be moved by the plight of these people? And then you're supposed to compound, you're supposed to equal it or overwhelm it by the civilian casualties we are told are happening in under the Israeli attack on Gaza. But the notion of using people as civilians as human shields doesn't even, we're supposed to be in this complexity of grays in the world, right? We're not supposed to have black and white. But these same people, they don't even think about the notion of the human shield as a war crime, as an immoral act of using innocents, hospitals as war depots and munition centers and bunkers and things like that. So the whole thing, people are very disappointing to use a tepid word. It's incredible to me that reaction is going on to these events. I think I've still not quite processed it, I think.
No, that's what was discouraging to me too, is when the same talking heads that are always pushing out the propaganda on everything, when they start pushing out this propaganda, and then some people on our side buy into it because it's emotional. It's, oh yeah, the poor Palestinian children or whatever, where the, you know what I mean, where they just get sucked in, where instantly Israel should not be able to defend itself. Israel might not even have the right to exist. When they start questioning foundational points of reality, it's, yeah, you're like, oh my goodness, somehow the discernment is our side's really lacking, and always has been. Our side has always not had the wisdom to discern a lie and the truth, and something that sounds good as opposed to something that is good. I've seen that over my whole life, and I don't know what the missing link is there, because I think a lot of them are good people. They're not trying to get on the emotional bandwagons, but they do. But it's been something that's been used so effectively. Just, and then the narrative that so many people buy into, like if you're against the Ukraine war, which of course I was, because it was meaningless, all these poor Ukrainians dying and Russians die for no reason because Biden won't say, Ukraine will never be part of NATO. One sentence that would never have happened, hundreds of thousands of dead. But if you say that war is ridiculous, then you're pro-Putin. You're calling me
I
you
know.
communist
He's
sympathizer.
a talkie. I know. Ridiculous. I
Yeah, I'm like,
know.
it's so, it's.
Well, I think, there's that also that level of complete corruption at which all these wars, whether it's in the Middle East or Ukraine or elsewhere, they are not wars about people. They are wars about money. They are wars about the defense industry. They're wars about keeping the party going in terms of the munitions and the monies and the economies that are not based on real things anymore, just the flow of loans. I mean, all of that pretty complicated stuff. I wish I had a better head for that, to tell you the truth. But I think that it cannot be underestimated in wondering why these things are taking place. And certainly there was some people have made interesting arguments saying that, well, as Republicans were becoming very disaffected with supporting the war in Ukraine going forward, as led by, say, Matt Gaetz in the Congress, this was a danger signal, and there needed to be another war. There needed to be something that would be harder not to support. And I thought that was such an interesting theory that, and I saw a couple of pretty smart people, saying, yeah, that could be that actually that the whole takedown of McCarthy and so on in the Congress could have been a preliminary step leading to what we're looking at now. And you just realize these leaders, these different elites, they call them, they're not very elite in my view, but that crust of people that control things, they do look at us as cattle. They do look at individual lives as nothing, and they only see us as means to their ends. And it's important to remember that piece of it as well, along with the ideological or the other factors here, because if the party was still going for strong in Ukraine, maybe they wouldn't have thought they needed to open up a front in the Middle East. Who knows? It's very possible.
Yeah, war is a game to them, at least
War is a racket.
all of our lifetimes for sure, because you study it. It's the Henry Kissingers deciding, oh, we need to do this or we need to do that. And even if they have to sacrifice 55,000 of our boys in Vietnam and then just back out and then allow the Vietnamese people to be slaughtered by the millions by the communists coming down, oh, well, it was
That's
worthwhile.
fine.
And yeah, back like it was all, no, it was still meaningful. No, it wasn't. And it's,
No.
I have six boys. You might not know that, Diana, but
Six, yeah.
so it makes me go, no, my boys are not dying for that. I would be happy for them to die if it was for freedom and to liberate a people. And but that storyline that we're sold has just unfortunately hardly ever been the truth in history. It's not, it's just not over the last 100 years that that's not the reality of it. It's sold as that because they know that'll get tears in our eyes when we're talking about freedom and waving the flag. And so yes, I'm signing up today. But I hate that those people are so wicked. They will abuse those sweet hearts that go, no, I if it's someone's freedom, I would be willing to die for that. And they use that, and then they
Using.
don't deliver. The life was lost for nothing instead of for that precious freedom, which is a noble and worth dying for. Oh, it just that's one of my hot buttons because I
No,
have
it's
boys. I
true.
don't want
Yeah,
them ever
no.
sent to just waste their life or be killing the good guys possibly.
Yeah,
That's why I just
right.
think it's so scary today. I'm like, and I've talked to my sons about that and go, normally it's been an honorable thing, but I don't want you going into that because
No.
our country is not honorable anymore. So you can't
Right.
trust that your commander in chief is going to have you only doing what is absolutely necessary for the end goal of absolutely freeing someone from tyranny, where they are
Right.
free when you are done. They have the US Constitution as their constitution and all the God-given rights. Then, like, no, that if you all die for that, I'd be the happiest man on earth going, no, they lived a meaningful life, standing for loving their neighbor, doing something for others. That's great, but that is not the case.
Oh, it's not. No, and you can't even tell them that they would be under the command of a truly American commander in chief at this point. He was installed his own, certainly by communist China and other anti-American interests. So the whole idea that there's an American side even to fight on at this point is sadly a delusion.
It is. No, we're in a rough
Yeah, we
space
are.
here. Now, I'm going to ask you this one last question, then
Yeah.
we'll wrap up.
Okay.
And this question is, what is the future like, but look like? But here's some things I'll comment on.
Okay.
I mean, we look at the world right now and it looks so fragile. I mean, it's just any day, anything can happen, and it's just crumbling economically. We see the fiat currencies are collapsing. We see just everything kind of unwinding. The elites seem, in my opinion, to be hungry for something big. I think from COVID, it kind of spoiled them where they realized when you have something really big, you can gain so much ground so quickly. We're tired of the long, slow march through the institutions. We want it by 2030, which is only a few years away. And I know, having read all their stuff, what they want to accomplish by then. We all know their list of goals and things, and they may or may not reach it. But knowing that's how far they want to go in such a short period of time, well, I mean, what do you think about that? And I know you don't, we don't know the future, but from your study of history, which lets you see the future a lot clearer than most, what do you see?
Well, it looks very murky, even so, but the signs are very bad because at this point, we don't have any institutions on our side responsive to the people, maybe individuals, but it's not more than that. I mean, look, the Congress just voted, 70 Republicans just voted to give the FBI 300 more million dollars for a new headquarters that is supposed to be bigger than the Pentagon. So all of that continues. But what does it look like? I think it looks very dark. I think that we are in a very dark place. I think the population will be contracting after the COVID shots. I think we have to take very seriously the so-called Deagle forecasts, which show this massive contraction of population in Western countries, including the United States, by 2025. I think it's happening around us. So it's hard to have a view of the way through, aside from just trying to be as well versed and as tough as possible, learning to say no whenever you need to say no regarding, your child or your family or your community. But it's very tough. I think there's still a lot of great people in America and probably a majority thereof, but we don't have a mechanism for our power at the moment.
That's right. No, that's I agree
Yeah.
with you on that. No, so it's you all individually being informed about what's going on, so you're not sidetracked or you're not drawn away emotionally to be on the wrong side of an issue. It's
Yeah.
you then, but taking that knowledge, and of course your children, if you still have children or grandchildren around you, imparting that wisdom and understanding to them of all that you've learned over your life, so that they're not sitting ducks for all the propaganda, because the propaganda today for our young people is just off the charts in every
Yeah.
area. They're being lied to about everything. There's not one thing they're getting the straight scoop on. So we need to be there, your neighbors, people at church, just in your community, building that little network of four, five, six, seven people around you that you get together every so often, you talk about things, and you're there to get good counsel from, but also to get a plan for locally. Okay, if some of these bad things happen, what would we do? How would we react? What are we going to do to take care of each other and to be a blessing to the people around us and stuff? But yeah, it's uncertain times, and I think, but it's a very exciting time to be alive. I think it's the most unique time in world history, which again isn't the easiest time, but it means the cause we're standing for of truth and what is right is so needed today. The light
That's true.
of the truth is in the darkness of the lies is so powerful. And I think as the circumstances have happened over the last few years to awaken millions more to realize something's wrong, something's off, those people are all perfect to be educating and to be bringing up to speed on stuff. Yeah. And so, being a Christian, I just know God can do things with that. He can bless our little efforts, even though we don't have the big mechanisms of control, but we can raise our children and we can influence those around us. And we can be growing behind the scenes a population of people that will say no, just like you said. No, thank you. I'm not interested in your passports, your vaccines, your digital currencies, your what. I'm not interested. Thank you, no. Have a good
Thank
day.
you, no,
Yeah.
exactly.
And then we just go about being faithful to do what we know is right to do. Diana, your Patreon channel, talk about that, where they could get your books and things to support you.
Sure. Well, I as you mentioned, I do about a weekly Patreon discussion and have pretty lively chats there. I'm on Gab at Real Diana West, and my books are available at Amazon. I'm sorry, it's Amazon, but it is Amazon. At least it's Amazon. But that's where you can still get my books, The Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and The Red Thread. And I also have a very small book I always forget about, but it was a book of columns called Remember When Obama Wouldn't Show ID. So it's about the birth certificate controversy, which I covered pretty closely, and his failure to release any real papers, identity fraud, et cetera. So that's always a fun one. But my website is dianawest.net, and I will advise your viewers to visit it now because it is going down at the end of the year. I'm sorry to say. I have a long-running host who doesn't want to host me anymore. And it turns out that the architecture of the site is kind of obsolete, so it becomes very difficult to transport it easily. So I have to figure something else to do with all my material, which I am saving, but it won't be available as of, I guess, January 1st, which is sad, but I hope to start up again
Okay.
in another platform. But so
No.
that's me.
So Diana West Patreon channel, that's where you all can go and $5 a month or whatever to again support someone that's trying to dig in, research, understand the times so you don't have to. And so you don't have to do that all the time. You can just listen. That's what I'm trying to do here with Agenda Weekly. But she is one of the few that does things at a deeper level and is very thoughtful, and that's why I have her on here. I appreciate your thoughts very much, Diana.
Thank you.
And but the books, all of them are great. But American Betrayal, if you have not gotten that one yet, every single one of you, if you don't have American Betrayal, a hard copy in your library, you need to get one of those at Amazon.com, and I'll have the link below. That is a classic. 100 years from now, people will be reading that book. To understand what really happened in World War II and since then. So that's just a must. I'm telling you that I don't encourage you to get too many things because I don't want to overwhelm you, but that one is worth getting. It's vital to understanding the world in which we live in. But Diana, I appreciate you joining me very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Curtis. I love coming on with you.
I know we covered a lot of different things in that, but hopefully you got a few nuggets to help you better understand the times and what's going on. Her books really are good. Death of the Grown Up, American Betrayal, and The Red Thread. We have the links below if you're interested or to support her or make a donation on her Patreon channel. people on our site need support to be able to keep working to expose the lies and spread the truth. So we need to be very supportive of that. Our verse for this week is from last week as well. It was Ecclesiastes 12, 13, and 14, two verses for these 2 weeks. It's such an important verse, again, from King Solomon, who was the wisest man that ever lived. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. That's really encouraging to know that our stand for the truth, whether it wins, whether it loses, whether we have to pay a high price for standing, it's noticed by God. He sees it, he cares, and he's watching. I appreciate you. Next week will be Thanksgiving. We're going to have our episode come out on Wednesday so we can enjoy Thanksgiving with our families like we hope you do as well. We still have so much to be thankful for. And until next week, God bless you.
Welcome to Agenda Weekly. We invite you to join us for an overview of the news from a conservative Christian perspective. You may be familiar with a weekly video podcast from Curtis Bowers, but Agenda Weekly is much more than that. Every Friday, we provide a written summary of the most important news events from America and around the world. We don't just cover the bad news. We find the often overlooked encouraging stories, because we all need some good news. Additional resources include informative videos and articles to dig deeper, a featured hymn of the week, essential prayer points, and specific actions to take personally and in your community. For only $5 a month, less than a cup of coffee, you can subscribe to receive the most comprehensive news source available. Our goal is to save you time, expose the agenda behind the news, and equip you to make an impact right where you are. Subscribe today at agendaweekly.com.